Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Dustin's Vinyl. We had a few technical difficulties, but we're back and we're ready to rock. Happy Inauguration Day. Very excited for Smokin' Joe Biden as our new president. Very excited about it. I think it's going to be very exciting for the country. I feel like we already feel a weight lifted off of us. And Kamala Harris, I mean, come on. How cool is that? First female vice president. She's going to rock it out. It's so nice to be able to look at her and not Pence for another 4 years. It was a great inauguration. The reason I bring it up is because it's important. And it was some great music up top. It was pretty exciting. Lady Gaga, who I try not to like her. I was, you know, but then every time I see her, I'm impressed by how good she is. She's kind of a Grace Jones, Madonna thing going. She's this fusion of herself and very, very talented. And she killed it, sang national anthem, and it was on pitch, perfect. And, you know, it's Lady Gaga was hard to follow. And then so they throw in J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, the amazing Jenny from the Bronx. She's saying, "This land is my land." Woody Guthrie's song. She did a great job. Thought she nailed it. And that was a lot of fun to see her. She looked amazing as well. And then to close it out, Mr. Garth Brooks sang Amazing Grace. And the fact that Garth Brooks is kind of being, you know, supportive of Joe Biden and everything, he probably lost a million fans just because his fan base, and he doesn't care. And that's how badass he is. And he's a guy that I think, oh, you know, I'm not really into him. I'm more into Johnny Cash or whatever, those kind of artists. But he really was the outlaw country guy today. The fact that he would, you know, stand behind Joe and then risk all that fan base. And he did a great job. Amazing Grace. It was a funny little moment. He tried to get everybody to sing with him and everybody was like, nah, man, we're wearing masks. We're not going to sing Amazing Grace. But it was a lot of fun. Very excited. And, you know, I think it's going to be a good transition for everybody. So that's that. That's America. And America is going to be great. So my random pull of the day is a British band, actually. We talked a little bit about them last week. This is a Bee Gees album. And a lot of you might have watched the documentary that is on HBO. This is a really cool, rare Bee Gees album. I've never seen it. A lot of times I'll just buy albums and I haven't heard of them and just be pleasantly surprised. And this is one of those albums. The title of it is Trafalgar, something like that. I could barely say it. But it's a really cool album. You got the Bee Gees. And got my ring light there. And I don't know what it was with in the 70s. Everybody wanted to wear these Captain Crunch outfits. But that was kind of a thing. But this is a really good album, man. It's like from top to bottom. It sounds great. And a lot of times when people, you know, when we think of Bee Gees, they go Saturday Night Fever and all that stuff. And that is a great album. But this has the sound before a lot of the heavy disco that the Bee Gees were with. It was, is, you know, some of these early albums are really kind of ones that just didn't get a lot of play, radio play for sure, but the really good stuff. So, you know, the first song here, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, is a really good Bee Gees song, Greatest Man in the World. Israel is a cool song, Lion in the Winter. So anyway, this is a cool Bee Gees album. And if you hadn't seen the documentary, it's phenomenal. Jeff's seen it like 5 times. It's a really cool kind of exploration of what happens when you're talented and sometimes you get too popular and how, you know, sometimes that can hurt your career and things like that. And then just the amazing sound that this band had. You know, I've never heard harmony better in my life. And, you know, it's just really cool to get you some Bee Gees. So go for that, kind of vintage Bee Gees stuff. And speaking of that, a lot of people ask me, you know, where do I get my vinyl? And I do get them in a lot of record stores, and I do go to like a Salvation Army and things like that. And so a lot of times it's hard to get, you know, good albums at a Salvation Army. So what I recommend is going every day to some thrift store. And then that's when the new albums come in and you could get stuff. You know, I got this for like a buck and it's in perfect condition. So you really got to kind of stock the kind of Salvation Army stores and you'll find some good vinyl there. So that's what I got up top. Very excited. And I think today's theme would be dudes that sing really high. So we'll talk about that in a second. I'm bringing my host. He's a very funny comedian. He's worked in the music business for a really long time and worked with a lot of different bands. And he's cool, good friend of mine. Jeffrey Paul, what's up, buddy? What's going
Hello,
on, man?
Dustin, how are you,
how
bud?
You Happy Inauguration Day. I know you're excited.
Oh, you're very excited.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see that? Did you see that up top? The music up top? That was great. Lady Gaga.
I missed that. Okay. I did watch them come in. I like that part.
You gotta watch the music, listen, man. And tonight is great. How great is it? Foo Fighters, Bruce Springsteen, John Legend. Come on. I mean, that's how cool the Democrats are. That's a way better than Kid Rock and Ted Nugent. You know what I mean? I'm just saying.
I don't know about that, but
I'm just saying the talent factor is amazing. Yeah. Foo Fighters and Bruce Springsteen. Are you going to argue me on that? Come on.
I think I like Kid Rock and Nugent. I think those are
over
good
the
bands.
Foo Fighters and Bruce Springsteen. Come on, man. Let's still start this early. Maybe shut up.
Let's go back to your random poll there. Trafalgar.
Yes. Trafalgar. There it is. Trafalgar. Yes.
And How to Mend a Broken Heart. What an amazing song, huh?
Yes. That is a great song. This is a cool album, man. I really enjoyed it. The Bee Gees. Great. Talk to me. Bee Gees, what do you got?
Yeah, no, listen, a huge Bee Gees fan. I saw that documentary three times already, and I tell you, man, I pick up and learn something every time I watch it. And I had my son watch it, and he couldn't believe that when you look at like them singing, like he knows them from Saturday Night Fever music because that's it's the most popular. But then when you hear like a couple of years later, like 10 years down the road, and they put out You Win Again, and then in the 90s they put out Alone, he couldn't believe it was the same band.
Yeah, they're great, you know.
And you're 100% right. The harmonies, I think when you talk about harmonies, you look at the Bee Gees, you look at the Beach Boys, and then I know I'm missing one other band in there, and they're the top three harmony bands. Maybe like one of those surf bands, like the Everly Brothers or something like that. You know, great harmonies.
Beach Boys. Just amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Even Oak Ridge Boys were great harmony, actually.
Oak Ridge Boys, sure, yeah. They were Elvira, right?
That's one of their big hits, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. But let's talk about probably top 10 album of all time.
Ooh, really?
Arguably, of any band, of any genre. Wow. Yeah, that's what I think about this album. We are talking the 1975 fourth album relief from the band Queen, the classic A Night at the Opera. And I mean, right off the bat, as comedians, we got to love it because they took it from the title of a Marx Brothers movie. And there is really not a bad track. And you're only talking about great tracks on it. And last week we talked about the different blends of music that Living Colour did. Look at the different types of songs on this album, the different instruments. You got, besides guitars, you got harps and ukuleles and different sounds. And it's just so great. So let's get into the tracks. And let's start with the opening track. What'd you think of, before we do this, let's bring in Adam. Okay, because this is Adam's first time listening to this album. Dustin, you're a veteran of this album. You know this album, right?
I'm not, actually. No, I'm not.
You're not.
I own it, and but that isn't, I got it a little bit later. But yeah, I enjoyed it, but we'll go into it. But hey, Adam, good to see you guys.
Adam. So I'm really dying to know what you guys thought about. So let's start with Death on Two Legs. What did you guys think about this?
Great song. I love, it's kind of a cello up top or something, some sort of bowed instrument that's kind of womp womp. It's kind of a horn or a cello. Like, that's the thing about this band. There's so many instruments, but it could be anything because they experimented so much, like you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's a guitar.
Is it a guitar? Okay. It's great. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Brian is just known for overdubbing and playing track over track and then bringing it down. So that's what that sounded. But go ahead. So what did you think of the song?
It's great. It's kind of a spacey rock song, which I think this album kind of has that space rock, I guess, if I were going to give it some sort of theme. Yeah, it's great, man. It's in the solo in this is amazing. It's like the guitar work is great. It's yeah, it's great. Really kind of reels you into this album. It's fantastic.
Adam?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, this song is about their former manager, too. It's a really venomous song also.
It's... I've always thought this was like one of the first diss tracks.
Right.
You know, I mean, it is a nasty song. When I was a kid, I listened to this when I was a little kid and I thought it was about a woman. And then when you get older and you understand what he's singing about, this is a nasty. This is like, man, you fucked me over song. I mean, look at the opening. You sucked my blood like a leech. You know, it's like, you know, I saw Queen several times. And when they would introduce this song, he would introduce this song as "This goes out to a real motherfucker of a gentleman," and he's talking about Norman Sheffield, their original manager that screwed him out of money and gigs and stuff. So this is what it's about. And it's like, and like the line in there, so obvious: "You stole all my money, yet you want more." I always thought "Death on Two Legs" was about a woman. And it's about a guy who screwed them over, like a record company slimy executive. It's a phenomenal song. Wait, great song to open an album.
And this is, well, they did this. This album was independent, right? Because I knew they had problems with the record label. They didn't want to do this.
No. They were still on the label.
Well, they did it on their own, though, without producers, is what I read. That they didn't. It was like they were having
Roy Thomas Baker produced it.
Did he? Okay.
Because who already had a reputation of producing Alice Cooper down the road, actually before, and then later on, a couple of years later, he's going to produce the Cars albums and Journey and a bunch of well-known bands. So he did produce it. They didn't produce it on their own. They wrote all the songs, and every musician on this album, John Deacon, Brian May, Roger Taylor, Freddie Mercury, they're all phenomenal musicians in their own right. And they all play multiple instruments as well. Okay. But that's Death on Two Legs. And then what's great about it is the way the song just like cuts off, ends, goes into like a weird, like almost 1920s sounding Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon. Did you guys like that tune? Completely different than this track.
It's very ragtime, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of Glenn Miller, kind of just that old sound.
Yeah, like a UB Blake type of thing, you know? And it sounds like he's singing the song through a megaphone, but he's not. What they simply did was they took the microphone and stuck it in a tin bucket to replicate that sound. But yeah, it's such a fun song. It's like, okay, we want to screw this guy over, you know, that for all eternity, that will always be on this album. And now we're going to get into some fun stuff. And it becomes much, much more lighthearted. So that's the second track on it. And then the third track on it is a weird song. I'm in love with my car. Do you guys like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's how good this band is. They could sing about bicycles, cars. Yeah, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. That's how good they are. They could read the shampoo bottle. That's how good they are. And that's basically what this song is. It's saying, I could do whatever the fuck I want. I can sing whatever I want. It's still going to be a great Queen song. And so, yeah, it's a weird one. But it has a cool sound, though. I like it.
Yeah, they all contributed. They all contributed writing. They all contributed a great song to this. And this song was, this is Roger's song. And it was almost considered a joke. Like Brian May didn't take it seriously when he brought it up. And you thought that I'm in love with my car is a metaphor again for a woman. It's not. It's a guy who really like loved his car. And you know the car he's talking about is Alfa Romeo. He had this car. Alfa Romeo. Yeah, it was a cool car. And at the end of the song, you hear like, you know, the revving the engine. That's his car. He, you know, it makes a debut on the album. But yeah,
Coke was good in the 70s, right? You know? I mean, that's the thing.
And again, it's Roger singing it. Okay. It's Roger's song, but they all play and they all sound, you know, great. They all, it's again, with three songs in, you're hearing three different sounds and they're all great. And then let's get to the fourth track, because this is a contribution by the bass player, John Deacon, who was a quiet guy. After Freddie dies, he never performed with Queen again. You know, they did the tribute concert, and that was it. When they had gone out in this, like I'm wearing a Queen shirt from their last tour.
Oh, you did Adam Lambert?
Yeah, he was fantastic, by the way. Fantastic. But John wrote this song as an ode to his wife. I mean, just such a beautiful song. You're My Best Friend, the second single.
This is a good song. This song sounds the most 70s of the songs. I feel like this one's the most dated, where it feels like a very radio friendly kind of, you know, the era of that time. This is the only song that I feel sounds like it was recorded in 75, because it has kind of that feel to it, you know. Just a lot of songs sounded like this. I felt like, you know, a lot of that kind of radio play stuff, kind of lovey-dovey stuff. Everything else is kind of has this weird angle to it. I mean, this is probably the most, you know, kind of just basic poppy sound, I feel, of all the songs on it. Doesn't have like weird instruments and stuff.
No, I think it's the reason why the record company, and this was the big dispute, what should be released first, this or Bohemian Rhapsody? And I think you're right. This is very, very radio friendly. It's a pretty song. It's a very catchy song. It's a great song in its own right, but it doesn't have the complexity that Bohemian Rhapsody is going to have when we get to it. Adam, what did you think about You're My Best Friend? You've heard this song before, right?
Yeah. This is one of the two songs that I heard on here before. And it's a very sweet song. It's catchy. It's very poppy.
I think it's on three commercials right now. So right.
Definitely very commercial friendly.
Yeah.
That's the thing now, to sell your catalog. Sell your catalog. Did you see what Bob Dylan sold his catalog for?
Oh, yeah.
$330 million. I guess he's
getting
ready to
check out. What are you going to do with that money, man? Why can't you just leave it?
It's like, generational
just leave
money.
It there. Just leave it there, man. I hate that. It's the most unpunk rock and roll thing you can do, is sell your freaking song to Cadillac. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. I've heard Hendrix on car commercials. And like, I'm just like, come on, man.
What are they playing? The Purple Haze?
Yeah, it might have been Foxy or something, but then if Led Zeppelin, I've heard a lot.
I think that is. Yeah. It is a Foxy lady. Right.
And then Led Zeppelin, they've done some car commercials. AC/DC did a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, it just breaks my heart a little bit. I understand it, obviously, my God, the amount of money they're making.
Zeppelin hasn't sold their catalog yet.
Yeah, but they've done some car commercials. If they haven't sold the whole catalog.
Then they gave permission. Okay, let's get back to the album, to the fifth album. And this is the space song that you're talking about, 39. Again, this is a Brian song. Brian May wrote this. He sings about it. And the song is about space travel and time and space explorers. And again, when I was a kid, I didn't understand it.
Yeah, this one didn't sound spacey to me, even though that's what it's about. It sounded very Creedence, actually. It had a folky sound.
Right?
Yeah, it had a very folky sound to it.
Yeah. This is a song that every time I've seen them, they've always done it in concert. They still do it in concert. Brian will come out on a stool, just do it by himself, and it fucking sounds great. He still sounds great. If Freddie wasn't in this band, Brian could have been the lead singer. Very easy. Him or Roger, they both have incredible voices.
Yeah, they're kind of like the Eagles. Like, they could just be interchangeable.
Yeah. Glenn Frey. You had Timothy B. Schmidt, who could sing. Henley. Joel Walsh.
He's my favorite. I love Walsh's voice the best for some reason. He's not as talented, but as voice-wise, but I just love it. I don't know. I just think he's...
I think when it comes to Eagles, I'm kind of like a Henley guy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then, but you dressed like Glenn Frey back in the 80s. I know you did.
I do. Hey, you know what?
Because Glenn Frey style.
I belong to the city, man. I'm alone. I'm a desperado.
You do. Before we continue, anybody want to contribute to this album out there? Anybody like this Queen album? You Twitch people, put your controllers down and interact with us, damn it. Anything? Nothing? Anybody have a favorite Queen song from this album?
Yeah, we just got one person saying that You're My Best Friend is this album's pop song.
Yeah,
that's what absolutely. Dustin just said. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. It's very, very poppy. It's a great thought.
It is.
And then I didn't even realize it was on this album when I heard it. I was just like, it didn't even make sense because everything else feels like this operatic thing. And then yeah. it's like this song's just kind of like, hey.
Everything goes in its own direction, really.
It does. Yeah.
Like now, I think the next song after, I think, is the worst song on the album, which isn't a bad song. And to me, this sounded very, very 70s. You know, I thought this sounded very 70s was Sweet yeah. Lady. You know, it's kind of like another Brian May song, an up-tempo rocker type of song. It's
a nice guitar groove. I like it.
Yeah, yep. but it didn't yeah. have like it didn't have like that it factor, that catch factor that any of these other songs have. And then side
I
one.
I mean, you know, when you yeah. say that, I'm like, come on, dude. It's like it's like saying that brushstroke on the Mona Lisa at the bottom isn't as good as, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's still amazing. It's
most
it's still,
people wouldn't be able to pick out this song off of this album.
Yeah, like the other that album, doesn't mean it's not great, song, you know.
Yeah, I think the other songs stand out. I think this one is just kind of like, it's there.
Yeah.
I don't want to say filler, but it was a song that was written and it seems like it's in its time. It just has a very 70s rock sound to me.
No, you have a point, but I just feel like I've never listened to an album that didn't have maybe one song that was kind of, you know, a B-side sound or something that was kind of, you know, filler, if you will.
Yeah,
I feel.
And then the first side ends with Seaside Rendezvous, which is a song that is very, very campy. It has clarinets in it and it has kazoos in it. And there's a segment in the song where it sounds like they're tap dancing, but it's actually thimbles on their fingers and they're by the top of the piano and they're hitting the top of the piano. Roger and Freddie making that like that tap dancing sound.
That was in the movie. That was in the great biopic.
Oh, that's right. That was in yeah, but not for that song. That song wasn't in the
It was in the movie.
Oh wait.
Yeah, I have a funny kazoo story. So my brother, he got three DUIs once, and the state put a breathalyzer on his car, and they he had to breathe into a tube to start his car. When he was drunk, it would go off or wouldn't go off, and so he figured out a way to beat it. He could start his car drunk if he had a plastic kazoo on the end of his tube, and so, so he's out there.
It's good to know. It's good.
So I'm teaching you kids out there to drive drunk. If the state puts a breathalyzer on, just get a plastic kazoo. You know what I mean? It's not just for music.
See, this is why people need to tune into this show. You know, people on Twitch, I hope you're writing that stuff down.
You should.
Okay. How to beat a breathalyzer test by Dustin Chafin.
That's right. It's can't just talk about music. We got to make it fun.
No, we're making fun. Yeah. We're giving back. We're giving back to the community.
You got
to
get back.
Is what we do on this show. The second side was, again, I when I think of this song, I think of myself as a little kid, I was going into junior high school at the time. And this was my favorite song because it was so dark and creepy and long and weird. And that is Prophet Song. And Prophet Song is a song that was written by Brian May after having a weird dream about a flood. So basically, when you look at the lyrics of this song, he winds up borrowing from the story of Noah's Ark. You know, he talks about like, you know, two by two, my human zoo. Like he's talking about things like that. And that's what it's about. It's about a big storm that's going to come and, you know, going to wipe out the world. And it's a prophet is warning people what, and this is the story of Noah's Ark. And this again, but what inspired him to write it is a dream he had, but it's such a heavy, dark.
This is a great song. It's an epic rock song. I feel like a lot of people were influenced by this sound of this particular song. Like, I feel like it has a Dio feel. It has a lot of kind of different, you know, kind
ahead
of that,
its time.
Yeah,
ahead of
very
its time,
ahead of
man.
Its time. And the fact that he had a dream, a thing makes it, you know, a little more interesting as a song. I was in Kentucky and they built a life-size Noah's Ark. it's gigantic. And they have animals that walk in there. It's like, I add these little, you know, bits of my life into these references to these songs. But so if you're in Kentucky, you can go to the real Noah's Ark. So if they ever have a flood, they can just all get on this arc. Like,
the way the world is going, I'm already going to start to build my own. But it's not going to be that big. It's going to fit me.
Yeah. A lot of two of every animal. That's a lot of animals. I think
a lot of animals. Yeah, right.
That's a lot.
And then the song after it, complete opposite once again, and that is Love of My Life. This is really portrayed pretty well in that Bohemian Rhapsody movie. This is, you know, Freddie, his love song to the girl he was dating at the time, Mary. Beautiful song. Brian is playing the harp on it, and again, it's a love song, Love of My Life. He thought he was in love with this woman, but.
Yeah, very few people can, you know, use the harp and make it, you know, cool or rock. And exactly. The fact that this is really, this is like a haunting love song. You know what I mean? Like it's a ballad of whatnot, but it's haunting. And especially can you kind of know the backstory, kind of makes it kind of this conflict of himself and everything, the sexuality and all these things. And so there's a lot going on in this song, you know, that he's fighting with.
And I like haunting love songs too. I always bring up Evanescence. It's one of my favorite bands, and My Immortal is such a haunting fucking song. I always feel the need to plug that song. I just don't think it ever gets the credit it deserves.
Adam, we got anybody? Oh, sorry. Just want to see if there's anybody.
We got somebody saying about the DUI story. I hope I don't need that skill.
But it's good to know.
I'm the only one that hasn't been arrested in my family. I just want to put that out there. So there's more GEDs than PhDs. But yeah, so if you're in that situation, just you know, you never know. You might need it.
I wrote that down already. So I'm not leaving this show without a good life hack. Okay. That's the one I'm taking.
There you go.
And then the next song after Love of My Life is a song this is very Dixieland style, jazz style. It's good company. This is where Brian plays ukulele. And I think this is just kind of like a warm-up for the big one is Bohemian Rhapsody. We all know this song.
Well, let's go about this song for a second. Let's get into this song for a second. I thought this song was very Beatles. It reminded me of
Good Company.
Okay. Good Company. Good Company reminded me of kind of a lot of Beatles songs. It kind of, you know, When You're 60, We Used to Love Me, and you know, those kind of
Yeah.
It kind of had that feel, and I'm sure the Beatles and all that was happening at the same time. So people were kind of like doing
probably
these kind of songs.
Earlier.
That's 75. Yeah. That was 60s. But it still sounds very Beatles. It's still an English. I mean, the Beatles are still kind of, you know, influencing all of English music pretty much, even in the 70s.
That's
for sure.
A great comparison to this song, When I'm 65. I could definitely hear that in this song. You're right. Yeah, I could. It's a good song. This is a good song. It's a song that gets lost because side two is very short with two really long songs, two epic songs.
I feel like the song would probably be better if you did mushrooms. Like there's some songs, like if you, you know, did some psychedelics, then
I thought that would see Side Rendezvous. I think there's a lot of weird shit going on.
What do you think, Adam? You've done it. You've been to a lot of raves. How do you feel about that?
I like how Dustin takes all that out there. You know all the raves you go to. You
know, he does. He knows what I'm talking about.
Naked,
he knows.
And you've made out with men. And
he's younger than us. He's younger than us. He's like, oh, so you're the only one that judges. All right.
I'm judge. I cast.
Yeah.
I cast. Okay. Good.
So, Adam, how do you feel about I don't want to miss your input.
Which one? Good Company or?
Whatever, dude. Just talk to us.
I liked Good Company a lot more than Seaside Rendezvous, which I gotta say, I thought Seaside Rendezvous was the weakest, at least for me, it was the weakest song on there. And it was, I actually liked Sweet Lady, but Seaside Rendezvous to me, it was too vaudevillian. I just really couldn't get into it.
Well, this band is very vaudevillian, you know, they're very, you know, they're like a one man, the four man rock circus. Like they're
right.
You know, there's so much, you know, so much going on. It's very, you know, big tent, you know, kind of sound. That's, you know, I think a lot of it is just all over the place. That's what I like about this band. They just, you know, they were able to pull it off.
About this album,
yeah,
is the different styles. Every song basically is its own song.
All their music is like that. Where it's like it's totally. It's like it. Their different songs could be different genres altogether. Like that's what's great about this band as a whole, is like there's so many looks on this band. You know, you can't just call it, you know, like every Motley Crue song sounds like a Motley Crue song. But this is a band that, you know, it's all over the place. It's fantastic. It's such a an adventure when you listen to Queen. Right.
Yeah, I think when you listen to AC/DC, everything in the Brian Johnson era, it's all the same album. It could all be one continuous album, and which is fine.
Back in Black is actually a little mixed up a little. I think that particular album has a lot of depth in it. Also, but I think I know what you're saying, though. I get a little defensive of AC/DC, but nobody's like Queen. So it's like it's hard, you know, to really Rush would kind of be close. And there's certain bands that could be close of kind of like musically what they did. You know, it actually kind of reminded me of 2112 in a way, because it had this kind of epic kind of, you know, production to it. Yeah.
Maybe this song, maybe Bohemian Rhapsody made you feel that way, because you talk about a produced song.
And oh, my God. Song
that's like basically like three songs, you know?
Oh, yeah. You have no idea where it's going to go. And I would love to be like, you know, sometimes on YouTube, they'll have somebody listen to a song for the first time.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I would love to get a kid or whoever just to get someone that never heard this song before on Wayne's World or whatever. No, right. But me personally, I would like to just see somebody, you know, because I feel like it's such a song that you have no idea where it's going to go. Like you think it's just going to be a traditional rock song, and then it goes this other direction, which is just fantastic.
When it goes into the operatic part, you're like, what fuck? And it's good. And it's good. And it's them singing. It's them actually singing. And they
fought him on it, you know. They nobody thought this was going to work, and then this was the number one song on this album.
I remember being a kid, and I went with my mother. I mean, I was a little kid, and I went with my mother to I remember we were going shopping. She goes to the supermarket, and I didn't want to like go in the aisles with her. And in the shopping plaza where the supermarket was a record store, and so every time I would go with her, she would give me money so I can buy a single. You remember a 45? And that was the 45 I bought, was Bohemian Rhapsody. The first time I heard it. That's not bad.
I love that part.
I like that part in the movie too.
Oh yeah. So good. Anything out there? Anybody want to contribute? We'd like to hear what you have about A Night at the Opera by Queen. Talk to us, people. See anybody?
Happy Miss Gift says, good company was a good lead in. Knowing what is coming makes it better.
It is great when you kind of like know the album, and then when you listen to it again, it's like that's when sometimes albums are so enjoyable, because you know the lead up is going to be this or the follow song and stuff. So, it is a lot of fun. But it is, I mean, it's like a story. This whole thing is just so fantastic.
I was, you know, listening to it for the first time. I was surprised that Bohemian Rhapsody was the next to last song on here. You know, you figure that would be closer to the top of the album.
Nah, I disagree. Last week, we learned what happens when you put your best song first.
Right.
it ruins everything. So, and then the last song isn't really a song. It's kind of a, almost like I would say the credits song.
Right.
You know?
100%.
Yeah, it's a 100%. Short little kind of melody thing that's just kind of, it's almost like the aftermath of Bohemian, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, this, yay, okay, everybody, thanks for coming, you know? That's what it feels like. So this is technically the closing song, you know, Bohemian.
Agreed. I couldn't agree with you more on that. I also think, Adam, is that Death on Two Legs had to be the opening song, because Freddie wanted to get that song out there. He wanted to set a tone. He wanted to send a message. And he listened to the way he sings it. And just a little stank he puts on some of these words, like you took my mind. And then he got shock. You know, yeah, you just throw that in there. Like you fuck. You fuck, you know? I love that. I mean, it's so raw. It's so real. It's not contrived. You know he's not playing. He hated this guy for real. You know?
Yeah,
this isn't made up.
Yeah, and a lot of those music people were son of a bitches, man. you know, all these Motown artists got screwed out of money. All these, you know, what, you know, Elton John had the same guy, right? The same manager for a while.
Elton John had the same manager. In fact, the guy who's supposed to be managing Queen is supposed to be the same guy that's screwing Elton John, literally, in the Rocketman movie.
But so all this stuff was happening with artists and stuff. So I think, you know, it's just trying to screw over the artist. It continues, you know. I have an album on Spotify, and it's like we barely get any money on that thing. Like it's a tough road for the artist. So it's like it's great to put it into, you know, a song. Like I think that's it's a good place to put it.
I'm kind of curious to know what you guys would have thought if like you put yourself in the record executive's position, and the band gives you this album with this where. It sounds like nothing that has ever been released before. Would you have the guts to put it out and put Bohemian Rhapsody as the first single, which was against every convention of what AM radio was at the time? And we got to remember, in 75, AM radio was the dominant radio in the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, songs were 4 minutes? And, you know, that was discussed in the movie as well. Minutes. The song was too long for, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think one thing that was happening in the 70s is people were starting to kind of like discover the artistic kind of, you know, things that were happening in music. And I think it's also kind of a thing you've never heard before. So it's like a almost like a Zappa thing or something. Like they're either going to love it or hate it. You know, you just put it out there and see what happens, because you're definitely going to say you've never heard it before. And so they took a chance with it. But yeah, I understand that. It's like sometimes you just got to throw out the weirdest thing and see if it works. And it totally worked.
Would you have had the guts to put your money up behind it? Because what if it would have been a colossal bomb?
You know what? You should see the things I've invested in. You know what I mean? Like I bought Beanie Babies. I bought Star Wars Phantom Menace action figures. Like the stuff.
I did both of those also too.
Yeah, exactly. We're nerds. Yeah, right. And nobody knows who Ray Gutz is, by the way. But
that was just for you, Dustin. Yeah. I don't care what anyone else thinks.
So I put my money in weird shit. So the fact that if I had the money, absolutely. I mean, this band is great, though. Anybody have a favorite Queen song that it doesn't have to be on this album? We're celebrating Queen. I don't know if you have a favorite Queen song. Mine's probably Another One Bites the Dust. I think I love that's one like of my one? Favorites. Oh, I love that song. We did lip sync that song in third grade. Me and my buddy, we did that. We won the lip sync contest. It was like third grade, dude. Like, what do you mean? Why? Because I'm a kid. It's like a music class thing.
Did you have an eye patch on for that one or no?
I'm in third grade, dude. Like, you out of all people can't make fun of me ever. Like, why can't you? Yes, I can. No, you can't. I've seen pictures of you. You can't make fun of anybody. You're from Staten Island. I'll make fun of myself.
I am now Johnny from Cobra Kai. I got the mullet. I don't have the karate skills. Other than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be nice. Anyway, anybody coming in on us or no?
You love Johnny. Okay. You love Johnny.
I do. Johnny's the best. I hate Daniel LaRusso. I hope he dies in the fourth season.
Jesus Christ.
Bring back. I'd rather have Hillary Swank than Daniel LaRusso right now.
No way.
The guy with the ponytail. I'd rather have him. All right. Anyway.
Let's see. So Mac down. Dave says, my favorite is Princess of the Universe.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And then we have Mac Dave also said, didn't another artist give Bohemian Rhapsody a bad review? And I think David Bowie encouraged putting the song out there.
Ah,
I did hear a story about a Bowie connection to this. Who's the person who asked the question?
Mac Dave.
Mac Dave, do you like the song Dragon Attack? Is that a song you like? That's something that was on an earlier album. Yeah, anything.
And we have Happy Miss Gift says Rhapsody, favorite one. And Jay dies a lot. I wonder how much Wayne's World played in reviving their music in the 90s.
Huge.
Oh, big.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, you know, the movie and also the movie, you know, that got a lot of people. And that's you know, that happens a lot, you know. I mean, Cobra Kai, we talked about that all the time. It's, you know, and unfortunately, commercials do that as well. You know, a song that, you know, I've listened to a commercial. I'm like, video games. Yeah. And then you just start listening to it. And I guess, you know, I mean, sometimes I don't like it when, you know, people sell their catalogs or whatever, but I guess that's what it does. It takes it to another generation, you know, but, you know, I wish people would just go out and just, you know, seek out the albums and stuff. But yeah, definitely all that plays. And that scene is fantastic in that movie. It's so fun. Wayne's World. So great. Like that when they start singing the thing, they put in the tape and they start going. It's so fun. But I think I got into Queen because of a movie called Highlander. And when I was a kid, they do the whole soundtrack. It's
What was the hit off of that?
They do Rock You. They do all. It's like the whole soundtrack. It's like it's just the
soundtrack to Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, they did Flash. That as well. But I remember hearing there's a scene where he becomes the Highlander in the beginning of it, and so you know this. It's just so great that the whole soundtrack is all Queen, and then swords and dudes. I mean, you can't get better than that. You know, it's like just cutting people in half with a Queen song. Come on. So that's what I found Queen.
That was the 80s movie?
Yeah, Highlander. It's fantastic.
I want to see.
Have you ever seen it?
Jeff?
No. Oh, it's not one of the greatest. It's one of the greatest movies, man. It's fantastic. It's my top 10. I love that movie. It's anybody see the Highlander? The original Highlander? I forget what song is at the beginning, but it's a famous Queen song up top, and then it's like glass breaks.
This is going to drive me crazy. I'm trying to find what was some of the big Queen songs off of here. Who Wants to Live Forever?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's an amazing song.
Yeah.
Who Wants to Live? In fact, the
last it's about immortality. That's the thing. They don't die. So that's why that song is kind of the theme of the whole movie.
It's such a beautiful song. And I got to say, when I saw Queen do it with Adam Lambert, you know, he's not trying to replace Freddie Mercury, by the way. He's fantastic on his own.
He's got pipes, man. Oh, he can sing.
But I got to say, the only song that I really think he may have sang better was Who Wants to Live Forever. He was absolutely stunning, beautiful. Out of all the concerts I saw, it has to be in my top 10 surprises of any song I've ever seen at a concert where like, holy shit, where did that come from? I did not expect it to be that good. That's how good. It's a beautiful. Adam, do you know this song? Who Wants to Live Forever? Oh, anyone out there, you got to listen to the song. It's such an underrated Queen song. I didn't realize it was from Highlander, though.
Yeah. Do you know the movie Highlander, Adam?
I haven't seen it in years, but I do know of it. Yeah.
It's a good movie. Check it out. That's your homework, guys. Right. I want you both to see Highlander. anybody else? Any new comments?
Let's see.
Before we get to the new albums of the week.
So Mac Dave says they never heard Dragon Attack. So they're going to give it a listen.
Give it a listen. Very heavy song. Very heavy song. It's like a metal song almost.
And we got a bunch of people talking about Highlander and how there can only be one.
It's such a great movie. I love it. But it's swords and immortality and Queen. That's all you need, man.
And who was in that? Sean Connery?
Sean Connery's in it. And there's a dude that played Greystoke, Legend of Tarzan. I can't think of his name, whatever that actor's name is.
I'm terrible with names. Yeah, I kind of remember the poster. You know, it was kind of like an orangey poster.
They did like five of them. Then they did they did a TV series. They did a whole thing. But Highlander, the original, is fantastic. The other ones I can't really vouch for.
Because
Mario Pibles shows up in one of them, and it's not that great. But the first one is great.
Once Mario Peoples makes an appearance in a movie, he's like the blackhead in Gimli. It's over.
He told me I was funny once. He saw me at Caroline's. He was like, you're really funny. And I had it as a quote on my website for years.
Was Mario Peoples.
Yeah.
He's a good looking guy.
I guess. And I don't know. I don't look at dudes like that. I'm not like, you know. We are talking about Queen today.
Yeah, we are talking about Queen. So,
so it's okay for men to love the appearance of other men.
And Mario Peoples did do New Jack City, which is a great movie.
It's classic. All right, Adam, what do you got for us, buddy? Take us home.
So, all right, this one stood out this week. it looks like it's an amazing artwork. The Mandalorian Season 1 soundtrack by Mondo. It's limited edition, one time pressing.
Nice.
LPs for all episodes. And so it is excited. Like $250, but it looks absolutely incredible.
Is it really? Well, that soundtrack is phenomenal. And it kind of reminds me of the old, what is it? The guy that did the Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, Ennio, starts with an M, his last name. Yeah. I can never pronounce it, but he
but it has like a, you'll just say that. But yeah, that's a great soundtrack. And the music really makes that series that much better. I know, Jeff, I know you don't like Star Wars, but this is you should watch this series, and I will pay you $100 that you'll like it. There's no way you won't like this series. It's a Western. It's fantastic, but the music is so good in it. So good.
Okay.
I mean, 8 LPs, it just, you know, unfortunately just, it's so expensive, but all the artwork, I guess each LP has a different scene from the episode.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, this is how good Star Wars is. Like I get socks for Christmas, right? And not only do I get socks, I get Star Wars socks. And so every day it's like a, it's like one day of Christmas Star Wars. You got all the, that's the thing with Star Wars stuff. They market everything just like amazing. You know what I mean? And so even socks, that's how good Star Wars marketing is. So that's why this album is $250, because the Kenner Company or Lucas or whatever, they know how to market. So it's like, they're the only movie that can get away with a $250 record. Them and Wu-Tang Clan, which I think that was like a million. What was that?
What?
Remember, they released one album, and then that guy that went to jail bought it.
Martin, the pharma bro.
Yeah, and then he bought it for $1 million. It was one record, and it was like, it's the only record I've seen. Like
a Staten Island group, by the way.
We all know.
Here's something you don't know, is that Method Man is a client of my wife's. He brings his dogs to my wife's practice. Nice. Yeah,
and I helped Pete Davidson get a start. Staten Island. Anything else?
Yeah. Since we're on Twitch, we and this is a band that all of us like, Nine Inch Nails soundtrack to Quake.
Oh,
nice.
Two LPs.
Love Nine Inch Nails.
Very cool.
Their
soundtrack work is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The Social Network, that's a great album as well.
Let's see. And we also have a reissue of Iron Maiden's first album.
Nice.
My band.
Jeff loves Iron Maiden. Very cool, guys. So get out there, get some vinyl, get some music into your life, and definitely get this album. This is the Queen's album, Night at the Opera. There's a lot of good songs on it. And don't skip to Bohemian Rhapsody. Listen to the other songs.
Whole thing.
Top to bottom. That's what I feel a lot of people don't do anymore, because they don't buy albums. And that's the best thing about records, is once you put it on, you know, you got to kind of listen to it, unless you're going to like scratch your record if you're trying to like, you know, get to the song. So it forces you to listen to the songs in entirety. So get this album. It's a great album. And really enjoy talking music with you guys. And check out our Facebook page. Like us on there. And please feel free to send us any suggestions for the show. If you want us to cover any albums, we would love to do that as well. And thank you guys for listening to Dustin's Vinyl. We'll see you later. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Adam.
Hi, guys. And, have a good week, everyone.
Keep rocking.